Hi there, can I help you? You're looking for something for the garden?
Well, I want to plant
what
for my...
What she wants is a nice lay landy hedge, am I right?
No, well...
And a lovely big hot tub.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let someone else decide for you.
Oh, and a pair of those crouching stone lions, they'd look great either side of your front door.
Do I know you?
That's our new trainee. He's very keen.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
And would you like that for delivery?
Yeah. Apartment 3, 6th floor.
Oh, you're going to need a crane for those lions then.
This week on Crime World...
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
If you like the Indo Daily, you can follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a crime that shocked two nations. A young woman, walking home alone from a night out with work colleagues, vanishes into thin air.
Let's bring you to Victoria now, and the search is continuing for a Melbourne woman who disappeared at the weekend.
Jill Maher works for the ABC and hasn't been seen since she left a bar in the suburb of Brunswick on Saturday morning.
Her husband Tom Maher, he's spoken to the media about how desperate the family is to find her. Here's what he said to us yesterday.
So we're obviously really worried, and we just we'd love to anyone who has any information at all or has, you know, knows anything about that night, to just contact us or the police.
It was 6 days before everybody's worst fears came to pass, a period during which emotions built up before spilling onto the streets of Melbourne.
Tens of thousands of people marched down the main street in Victoria, the main street in Melbourne, on a communal outpouring of grief, anger and shock. And this was a crowd that stretched out for more than a kilometre, with, you know, families, with children, couples, people holding handmade signs, you know, that read "No violence" and "Remember Jill Maher." And the feeling now is that she will not be forgotten.
I'm Kevin Doyle. And today on the Indo Daily, we look back at the story of Jill Maher. Joining me is Early Walsh, reporter with Nine News in Australia. But first, the Irish Independent's Ellen Coyne. Ellen Coyne, tell me about Jill Maher.
So Jill McKeown, as she was known under her maiden name, always known as Gillian to her parents, grew up in Drogheda, County Louth. She had one younger brother, Michael, and in 1990, when she was about 7 years old, the family moved to Australia. Her father had just gotten a job in Perth and the whole family resettled there. And by all accounts, they loved Australia. Her and her brother were thriving over there. And later on in the 90s, the family briefly came back to Ireland, which proved to be very lucky for Jill, because that's where she met Tom Maher in 2001. The couple fell in love. By all accounts, they were besotted with each other. And a few years later, in 2008, they got married. After that, Jill obviously still had a very strong connection to Australia, having spent so much of her life growing up there. So the pair of them decided that they'd move over to Melbourne. They settled in an area of Melbourne, a small neighbourhood known as Brunswick, and Jill got a job at a radio station called ABC Melbourne.
ABC is effectively the RTE of Australia in many ways, and this was, I suppose, the Melbourne office of that.
Exactly. And she'd only been there for less than a year when she died. But by all accounts, she was very, very popular. She had a lot of friends in the area. And as we know, it was a night out for a colleague's birthday in 2012 on September 22nd, which is the reason that all of us know Jill Maher's name today.
And there was nothing particularly special about that night out, Ellen. It was, and perhaps this is why it struck such a chord with so many people both here and in Australia, was it was entirely normal after work drinks.
nearly mundane, like a thing that any of us would do without really thinking on a Friday or Saturday night. They went out for drinks together, and then as the night went on, a smaller group kind of moved on to a pub near Sydney Road in Brunswick. So that would be like a huge road. At one end of it, it would be really, really busy, loads of pubs and restaurants. And then further down the road, closer to where Jill and Tom lived in an apartment, it was more a commercial area with lots of wedding dress shops and boutiques, which would be very busy during the day, but late at night, obviously, when all those shops are closed, it would be quite quiet and a little bit deserted.
And so tell me what happened.
So Jill left. It was her and another friend who were in, I think, drinking in a hotel at that point. The friend offered to walk her home and Jill said no because it was 5 minutes, which is totally reasonable. And as I said, it was a very busy road. She was walking down the street and footage collected from one of the wedding dress shops where an internal CCTV camera happened to be directed onto the street shows us that at one point a man in a blue hoodie approached Jill and started talking to her. They had a brief interaction. We later found out that the man was basically approaching her, kind of hassling her, and she rejected him. That man was Adrian Bailey, a 41-year-old, and after Jill rejected him, he followed her down the street, turned violent, and shortly after that, on Hope Street off Sydney Road, Jill Marr was raped and murdered.
Now, just casting your mind back, before the reasons that we're here today, to Jill.
Mm.
If I was to meet Jill, say, 2 years ago, what sort of person would I have met?
You would have met, sorry, you would have met the funniest girl in the world, sorry.
It's okay.
excuse me, she was incredibly funny, incredibly witty, and, just so smart and intelligent that she was she just brightened up any room she was in.
The search over the weekend was Tom raised the alarm at 4 a.m. when he woke and Jill hadn't returned back early that Saturday morning. There was a search over the weekend. A lot of her colleagues from ABC were putting up stuff on social media. Missing posters went up around Brunswick with what now is unfortunately that iconic picture of Jill where she has the red lipstick on and she's smiling. On Monday then, her purse appeared on Hope Street, which caused a lot of concern because police were full sure that when they were searching earlier that weekend, it hadn't been there. And when Tom was walking to his car, because obviously he lived really near the site where she died, he was telling reporters, like through tears, that it was just getting worse. And this caused a huge amount of concern. After that, Victoria Police pled with all of the businesses along Sydney Road to look for their CCTV. That's where the video emerged. It was shared widely across social media, and that led police to Adrian Bailey. So on the Thursday after Jill went missing, he appeared at a packed Melbourne Magistrates Court. Through his confession that Victoria Police managed to secure, they were led to the site of Jill's body, which was about 40 kilometres outside of Melbourne. And unfortunately, her body had been left in a shallow grave off of a dirt road.
And Early Walsh, reporter with Nine News in Australia, you remember the coverage of the story at the time.
Well, it was a crime that reverberated around Melbourne, and it was a crime that shocked the nation. It certainly shocked Australia because Jill Marr was only 29 years old when her life was cut short, you know, far too young. And the days when she was missing, the country waited with bated breath, desperately waiting for answers. It was almost unbearable during those first few days. And, of course, more and more time passed and that sense of dread grew. But I think the outpouring of grief was very, very real when her body was discovered and when it was realised that she had been murdered. I think as a woman we all thought this could have been me. This could have been my sister or my friend or someone I know, because in Jill we could sort of see ourselves, you know, a bright, happy, ordinary young person out just enjoying a night out with colleagues, just trying to get home safely. And the fact that this terrible crime happened to someone who we thought was just so relatively normal, on a street that we thought was relatively safe, where many of us have gone out and had fun in the past. I think that was what really cemented it and hit home to so many people across the country.
And that CCTV was really the breakthrough in the whole case, wasn't it?
So security camera footage, which was shot outside a boutique or a shop, showed a brief interaction between Jill Ma and also her killer, which was actually Adrian Bailey. Now, this was the key that would lead police to Adrian Bailey. So on top of everything, I think it was a feeling that the safety in our city was broken, because this was a normal street, this was a normal night out, and yet this CCTV captured this interaction between a young Jill Ma and this relatively normal-looking bloke, because he's walking down the street as well. But then you saw a flash of him sort of running after Jill on another set of cameras. And I think that was the key indication that would lead police to Adrian Bailey. Of course, it only took 6 days to catch Jill Ma's killer and about 6 hours for him to confess, let alone 6 minutes for a judge to remand him in custody. The CCTV really was a crucial point in the investigation for police.
It's not the way anybody wanted this story to end up. In particular, of course, Jill's family and members of her family in Ireland have released a statement.
We are devastated. We are heartbroken. She was the first grandchild my mother had. There are no words to describe how we feel at what has happened. We acknowledge the role that social media has played in the search for Jill. We believe that it has helped us in the search, but it's not the outcome that we had hoped and prayed for. We thank the people around the world who have helped support us.
Ellen, I think at one point the police had to ask people to stop showing, playing, spreading the CCTV because it was on a reel, apparently. It was played pretty much every 10, 11 seconds in Australia on some social media site.
That's right. I mean, I know that the story was obviously huge here, but I think sometimes it's hard for us to grasp just how massive this was in Australia. The week after her death, social media analysis showed that I think every 10 seconds on Twitter or Facebook, her name was being mentioned. And at first, that was really helpful because police said that social media played a huge role in helping them find her killer. But the grief and the sympathy soon turned to rage, and a lot of people started identifying her killer on social media to the degree that Tom Marr and Victoria Police actually had to ask the public to hold back, because they thought if her killer pled guilty, the case might be destroyed by what people were saying on social media. But I think that the degree of anger was natural and understandable, particularly when it emerged what kind of criminal history Adrian Bailey had at the time of her death.
And that's it, early, isn't it? He was pretty notorious even before the murder of Jill Maher.
He was already on the radar for police when Jill Maher went missing. A notorious rapist, but actually before he became a suspect, Jill's husband, Tom Maher, or coming to terms with this highly publicised disappearance of his wife, he actually became suspect number one during the very beginning. But it didn't take long for the investigations to shift their focus to Bailey, of course, a notorious sex offender who had a decades-long history of rape and of violence.
Ellen, early mentioned there that at one point Tom Marr was the suspect, and that's very common in police investigations when a woman goes missing, that the spouse or the partner is the first person they look at as a suspect. But that must have been incredibly hard for him with all the media attention. I remember the camera's been parked outside the house. How did that play out?
Right at the moment when his wife had gone missing, his life was being turned upside down and forensically investigated by police. And in the years after her death, there was a lot of reports from Australian crime reporters that there was actually a huge amount of guilt on the part of Australian police for the fact that they had to investigate Tom so thoroughly.
It took ages to kind of separate my memories of her from what happened to her, you know? It's difficult to separate, but, you know, it's worth it to try. It's worth it to remember Jill. So that's what I try to do. It's never over until you finally see that monster gone, you know. So I want to think of Jill. I don't want to think of him.
After Jill passed away, Tom really became a huge advocate against violence against women, and particularly in the role that male violence plays. And he wrote a really incredible essay in 2014 where he pointed out, like, he almost had this sense of guilt over the fact that cases like Jill's, cases of, you know, women being attacked by strangers, attract so much attention. And he was making the point that it's very hard to deal with the fact that you can't sustain that level of public interest for, an awful way to say it, but the more common examples of women dying, and we know that the vast majority of those are at the hands of a current or former partner. So I think he made it clear there that he understood just why he had to be investigated. But through his work, the work that he did advocating against violence against women, you know, Tom was always kind of making that point that what happened to Jill is an anomaly. You know, this kind of myth of people going around who are evil monsters doesn't really match the reality of male violence, where the perpetrators of these heinous crimes can often, to the rest of us, just seem like completely normal men.
I remember being a reporter in the Evening Herald at the time of Jill's disappearance, and it was on the front page here day after day after day. It was a huge story with the obvious strong Irish links to both herself and her family, and Tom and his family in Dublin. It's unusual to get a story that impacts two countries so huge. I mean, sometimes we're a small country, so, you know, these stories shock and there's a real community drive. But it's unusual for Australia to be as grabbed by a story. And I know that from having lived there myself in the past. So how did the reaction here versus Australia differ, do you think?
I suppose in a lot of ways they were nearly the same. And to go back to the social media element, there was actually a lot of kind of Australian and Irish communities nearly consoling each other and coming together literally across the world. I mean, if you look at the Australian coverage, people were saying that the Jill Maher case was being discussed at a scale normally only reserved for natural disasters in Australia. And people were in such a state of anguish that they just really wanted to do something. So I think that's why one of the legacies of the Jill Maher case is the fact that rules around parole were, it became much stricter. On that street, Sydney Road, a lot more CCTV cameras were installed. But even as recently as a few years ago, there was a discussion about taking them down because they hadn't actually been shown to reduce crime at all. And I suppose the fact of the matter is, when things like this happen, we all kind of scramble to do something. We all want to be able to say, you know, never again. But the reality is that the things that lead to these sorts of heinous crimes are much harder to unravel because male violence is so endemic, whether it's in Ireland, whether it's in Australia, whether it's anywhere else. We know that since Jill Maher's case, there have been multiple high profile cases of women dying when they're walking home. And I mean, if you look at Eurydice Dixon, 22, who was raped and murdered in 2018 in Melbourne, she had just texted her boyfriend, "I'm nearly home." A few months later, Aya Mazarawi, who's 21, had just got off a tram in Melbourne, and she was actually on a FaceTime call with her sister when she was attacked. Every single woman listening to this can relate to that. Like, I got off the dart last night and text my boyfriend, "I'm almost home." You do all of these things as a mundane routine part of your life, but the reason that these cases shake us and the reason that we're still talking about them 10 years on is because they make us feel that we have been taking our safety for granted every single day when we're just doing things that are just what we assume to be normal parts of our lives.
And early, I know in the last few days, there has been a conversation again in Australia. There's been a lot of coverage of the case again. What do you think a decade later is Jill Maher's legacy there?
Well, the impact of Jill's death on Australia was palpable. I mean, tens of thousands of people marched down the main street in Victoria, the main street in Melbourne, on a communal outpouring of grief, anger and shock. And this was a crowd that stretched out for more than a kilometre, with, you know, families, with children, couples, people holding handmade signs, you know, that read "No violence" and "Remember Jill Maher." And it was also, you know, it was twofold. It was both a desperate plea, but it was also a promise that this shouldn't have happened and this can't happen again. So as a result, there were new laws brought into place, but bigger changes come from understanding women's roles in society and those threads that lead everywhere. But you can't talk about those things in isolation, because you almost needed to have a bigger conversation. And I think these unfortunate events triggered that bigger conversation, and that led to various changes.
And so early 10 years on, what way has the anniversary been covered? I know in the last few days there has been some coverage. People have been remembering. What is the feeling now about Jill Maher's death?
Look, the outpouring of grief then was so real, but it still really is now, even 10 years on, because this was a 29-year-old whose life was cut so desperately short. And so I think in the last few days, Australia has remembered her. They've paid tribute to her young 29 years of life, and they want her to be remembered. And so there has been a lot of discussion, you know, have we made enough changes? Has Australia grown? Is there still unnecessary violence against women? What more can be done to ensure that this never happens again? And this is a conversation that unfortunately is still being had.
My thanks to Ellen Coyne and Early Walsh for joining me today. I'm Kevin Doyle, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Mary Carroll, researched by Garrett Mulhall, with sound by Gavin Hennessy. Archive clips were from ABC, RTE, The Herald Sun and Studio 10. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow and leave us a review.